Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. I will write down my thoughts. It's about eigenvalue estimates for Schrödinger operators. Okay, and this is a joint work together with Rupert Frank and Hinek Kovarik, who is here in the audience. So first I will talk a little bit about background and motivation. Background and motivation. So, if we consider the Laplacian minus the potential in L2 of RD, then the spectrum, if V is nice, looks like we have continuous spectrum from 0 to infinity, and then maybe some eigenvalues below 0. And I will denote those eigenvalues by minus lambda 1, minus lambda 2, and so on. And this negative part of the spectrum will be the thing I will talk about estimates on. So first we have the Zwickel-Lie-Bruson-Lund. Zwickel-Lie-Bruson-Lund inequality. From the 70s, and this is for the dimension d larger than equal to 3, and this it says that the number of negative eigenvalues of this operator can be estimated by a constant depending on the dimension, and it's of course uniform in the potential V, independent of V, and times the phase space volume like this. And of course we can also write this left hand side as the trace of this operator negative part and to the power 0. And later on there were Lieb and Thiering studied the generalizations of this. Lieb-Thiering inequalities. And they studied the quantity trace of this to some positive power gamma. And this is nothing else than the sum of the eigenvalues to this power gamma. And they proved that there exists a constant depending on gamma and dimension, such that this can be estimated by the integral in Rd of, and here it should only be the positive part of the potential, since we have minus V. And also here, gamma plus d half dx. Alright. And for the Zwickel-Lie-Bruson-Lund inequality, when gamma is equal to 0, we need the dimension to be 3 or more. But for this Lieb-Thiering inequality, we have results from dimension 1, and then it holds for gamma larger or equal than 1/2. And originally it was only proven for gamma larger than 1/2, But 20 years later, in 95, I think, Weidel proved it for gamma equal 1/2. And it's always with those Slip-Tiering inequalities that if you have proven it for a certain value of gamma, it always holds for larger values than this gamma. So it's what you need to do is to prove it for the lowest. And this is a result by Eisenman Lee, also from the 70s. And later on, in 98, I think, Hundertmark, Lieb, and Thomas proved that the sharp constant here was 1/2 in this case. And the sharp constant has been a big question, which is it's still unknown in some cases. And for d equal 2, this inequality holds for gamma larger than 0, and for d larger equal than 3, it holds for any non-negative gamma. All right. And we were interested in those inequalities on regular metric trees. And so I will define the tree first, and then I will discuss about the inequalities. So we consider a metric tree gamma. So we have a root U, and then we have a distance T0 to the first node. And from this node, there will be a branching number saying how many new nodes edges is going out from this node. And they will all have the same distance, T1, from the second node to the root. Okay? And out from those nodes, there will be a branching number B1, which tells you how many new edges is going out. Maybe 4, like this, and so on. Right? So the sequences Tj, when j goes from 0 to infinity, and Bj, when j goes to 1 to infinity, uniquely define the tree. Okay, so all edges of the same generation have the same length, and the branching number at a generation is always the same. And such a tree is called a regular metric tree. So such a tree is called regular. Okay. And on those trees, one can define a function called the branching function, so I denote it by G0 of T, and this will be nothing else than the product of those branching numbers up to n, let's say, and this is if n is, I should have equality on the other side. So if I'm at the distance t from the root, then my function is those branching numbers multiplied with each other. So g0 is nothing else than g0 measures the number of points. Of the tree, gamma intersecting with the sphere of radius t. Okay.
So the distances tj are cumulative. T1 is the distance of the B1 versus
it's to the root. Origin. Not it's the always to the root, yeah. Okay. And now we will make an assumption. And this is that gamma has global dimension D, and that is, I will also, and D will be anything from 1 and a finite number, and that with this we mean that there exist two constants, C1 and C2, positive, such that this branching function divided by t to the d minus 1 is bounded from below, above and below by those constants. And this should only hold for t, for large t. So asymptotically, we know the growth of the tree, but locally anything can happen. Okay, and so on those trees we define the Neumann-Laplacian. So we define the Neumann-Laplacian minus delta n in L2 of the tree as the operator that is associated with the quadratic form phi prime of x squared dx, where phi is taken from h1 of the tree, and h1 of the tree means the Sobolev space where the Sobolev norm is finite on each edge, and you can sum them up and they are continuous over the nodes. So the boundary condition at each edge of this will be the natural boundary condition, the Kirchhoff boundary, and the Neumann boundary condition is only at the root then. And our potential, we say, okay, let V be a potential from R plus and real valued. And the operator we will study is the Neumann-Laplacian perturbed by this potential, where we only take into account that we say that the potential is spherical symmetric, so that it only depends on how far it is from the root. And the main result that we get is that for any A larger than 0 and gamma, such that if the dimension is between 1 and 2 and A is less or equal than D minus 1, then for gamma larger or equal than 1 minus A over 2, one has the inequality. So the trace of this operator minus the potential negative part to the power gamma is estimated by a constant which is independent of V, of course, and the integral over the 3 of the potential to the power gamma plus 1 plus A over 2. And then I should write it as g0 of absolute value of x a over d minus 1 dx. This is looks more horrible than it is, maybe. Okay. But there is also other conditions, so that if the dimension is the same but A is larger than D minus 1, then for gamma larger than 1 plus A times 2 minus D over 2D, we have this inequality. And if the dimension is equal to 2 and gamma is, okay, now we have two criteria. One is that gamma is supposed to be larger than 1 minus A over 2, but also positive. For those, if those two are criteria are satisfied for gamma, we have the inequality. And the third case is if the dimension is greater than 2, then for gamma larger or equal than 1 minus A over 2 positive part, we have the inequality. Okay, so maybe we should remark a little bit. Do you have questions?
I just don't see how the integral estimator converges at all.
Okay, but all right. One assumes that V is in this space, and for those V's, one has this estimate. So
G goes exponentially with X. That is your right.
Yes, exactly.
So V has to decay much faster.
Yeah. So you start...
It was never said in this...
Yeah, okay, I didn't say this. You're right. So, the first thing one can say about this inequality is that if we, for instance, take A equal to 0, this will disappear, right? And we will here get the power gamma plus 1/2. And if A is equal to 0 and, for instance, dimension is equal to 1, then we will have that in dimension 1 and A equal to 0, then for gamma larger than 1/2, we have the inequality without this weight and gamma plus 1/2. And this is exactly what we expect in one dimension over the on the Euclidean line. And for d equal 2, if A is exactly. If d equal to 2, then for a equal to 0, we cannot go down to gamma equal to, I mean, gamma equal to 0 cannot be included here, and this is due to the fact that any attractive potential will always bind the particle in the two-dimensional space. So that in the weak coupling, the number of eigenvalues, which is if gamma is equal to 0, we will count the number of negative eigenvalues, and for very weak potential, this will always be 1. But on this side, it will go to 0, right? So this can never hold in two dimensions. So, but here we will need this weight in order to go down to gamma almost to 0, because this must also be satisfied. So by adding the weight, we can go down to the same same gamma as before.
You use the concept of dimension very loosely. On the one hand, on the original Lieb theory, it is the dimension of the space.
Mm-hmm.
And in the other case, it is the mean the mean how the tree is growing.
Mm-hmm.
And is it clear that two things can be interchanged in our mind?
No.
Okay, but you say this.
No, but this comes from. The tree has the problem of being both having a global dimension but also a local dimension, and this local dimension causes a lot of problem. And we will see this. I will write down some remarks. And the first one is that if gamma is less than 1 minus a over 2, I mean, we always assume this here, and this is also satisfied in this inequality, and also here and here. Then the inequality fails. And this is easily seen by approximation of a Dirac potential in L1. So if you take a sequence of constant L1 norm approximating a Dirac potential, since the exponent here is less than 1, this will go to 0. But the eigenvalue, this potential will bind an eigenvalue locally. So this will not be 0, it will be the eigenvalue. Right? So even though what the global dimension is, the this will always be a fact here. And the second is that if V is positive, then this operator we study, if we put a coupling constant in front of the potential, then for alpha greater than 0, the operator will always have an eigenvalue. And this is only the case if dimension is between 1 and 2, exactly as in the Euclidean spaces. And the speed of this eigenvalue coming out from the central spectrum, if d is equal to 2, is exponentially small, exactly as in the Euclidean two-dimensional space. But it has also the same behavior for d equal to 1, but for d in between, I can write down the asymptotical behavior in alpha, and this is, so if dimension is between 1 and 2, then there is constant a1 and a2, such that A1 times to alpha over 2 minus 2d is less or equal than the eigenvalue, depending on alpha then, which is less than A2 times this alpha to the 2 divided by 2 minus d. So if the dimension goes to 1, we will see that the eigenvalue comes out like alpha squared. And this is what we expect from one dimension. And if the dimension goes to 2, this clearly fails, but there is another result saying that this is exponentially small coming out. And this is result from Kovarik coming out this year, I guess. All right. So if the dimension is between 1 and 2, we know that gamma must be larger or equal than 1 minus A over 2. Otherwise it fails due to this approximation of a Dirac potential. But if A is larger than D minus 1, then this is not the problem, but the problem is that the weakly coupled eigenvalue comes out too quickly. So we need another bound. And this, I mean, clearly if we have a potential which only binds one particle, which is in the limit, comes out like this, then the left-hand side will be, left side will be like alpha to the 2 gamma over 2 minus d, and the right side will behave as alpha to the 1 plus to the gamma plus 1 plus a over 2. So now we must have that if alpha goes to 0, this exponent must be larger than this, right? And this will exactly give this criteria. Okay, so this comes from the fact that we have a weakly coupled eigenvalue that comes out with a certain speed. And in dimension 2, we need this criteria because of the local approximation of a Dirac potential. I mean, the local dimension. But globally, we also need that gamma is larger than the zero, due to the fact that we will always get an eigenvalue, even though how slow it goes comes out from the continuous spectrum, we cannot count the number of eigenvalues because there will always be one, even though the potential is very, very, very small. But if dimension is greater than 2, then we needs to take into account the local dimension. So every criteria which is not coming from the local dimension, I mean this and that, if we take them away, it matches exactly with the Euclidean spaces. Are you convinced?
So quick as you are.
Yeah. I will leave it. All right. But the problem is, there is one thing which is remain unsolved, and this is, so we have optimal bounds in our, this constant depends of course on the tree, which we are not even studying, the local behavior of the tree. But otherwise, in A and gamma and D, we have optimal conditions. If those are not satisfied, it fails. And for when those are satisfied, it works. Except for the remaining case, when those two exponents here are equal. So the open question is... Open question... is what happens when gamma is exactly equal to 1 plus a 2 minus d over 2d, and together with the fact that a should be larger than d minus 1. And this we don't know. We think it will work, but we haven't succeeded in calculating it yet. So I want to talk about a little bit about the methods. So this work heavily depends on a theorem by Neimark and Solomyak from 2000, and it says that this operator that we study is unitarily equivalent with an operator A0, which I will explain later, minus the potential orthogonal sum with, and there will be another orthogonal sum being AK minus VK, and this operator comes with a certain multiplicity, VK minus 1 and then VK minus this. So this is only the multiplicity. And the potential VK here is defined to be the potential V times the characteristic function of the interval from TK to infinity. So T1 is only the potential from here and to infinity, and T2 from here and to infinity. And AK is the operator in L2 of the same interval, TK to infinity, but with a weight TK and associated with the quadratic form from TK to infinity, F prime T squared GK T to T. Okay, and here F is taken from the Sobolev space H10 TK to infinity with this weight. And the weight GK is the branching function. Branching function starting from TK. So that means that it's G2 will be 0, and then 0, and then 1 on this edge, and then it starts to count after this, right? In the same spirit as this one. So you just take away those two in that case. And we have a Dirichlet boundary conditions on all of them, and this is, I should write that this is for k larger than or equal than 1, exactly. And A0 is defined a little bit different. So, and the only difference is that A0 is in the same way associated with the quadratic form of the same character from 0 to infinity, f prime of t squared, and d0, this are the one I erased, dt, but on the domain on the form domain h1 and not h10 as here. So this a0 operator, it satisfies the a Neumann boundary condition at where it starts. But all those operators satisfy a Dirichlet boundary condition from here. And this will be important. Because this operator A0 will be the interesting part of this sum. And this can quite easily be seen because the trace of our operator, the negative part to the power gamma, here, I mean the negative eigenvalues here should be negative eigenvalues of one of these operators. So it will be the trace of A0 minus V minus to the power gamma plus the sum of the traces of this AK minus VK negative part to the power gamma, but also now times the multiplicity. I mean, if we have an eigenvalue of one of these operators, it comes many times. So bk minus 1, then bk minus 1. All right. But one can estimate the trace of those ak minus bk minus to the power gamma by the trace of the first operator, like this. I mean, remember that those satisfy Dirichlet boundary condition, which is attractive in some sense, so it's we can extend this to the whole line and look at this operator instead. So now we can replace trace of AK minus BK here also by this. And then sum it up in the end. So the problem of determining this is reduced to the theorem that trace of A0 minus V negative part to the power gamma should be bounded by a constant integration over R plus of V of T plus, and then the same condition here over 2 times t0 of t. But okay, now I put instead 1 plus t to the power d minus 1 or up a to t. Okay, because this growth of of g0 can be bounded from above and below by a plus t to the power d minus 1. And this we will use. I will write it down now. But this is the theorem that we want to prove. But this we don't like this measure that we have, this g0 in here, so we want to get rid of this. So when we take the measure away, we will get another operator. So we define an operator bn via the quadratic form little bn of u being the integral of the half line of ut divided by 1 plus t to the d minus 1, and the derivative of this squared, and then 1, oh, it should be 1 half here, right? 1 plus t to the d minus 1 to t. So we try to do some ground state substitution, or generalized ground state substitution. And this is now for u in H1. And this operator is in fact minus d2 dt2 plus dimension minus 1, dimension minus 3, divided by 4, 1 plus t squared. And this satisfies the boundary on the domain of functions, satisfying the boundary condition that u prime of 0 is b minus 1 over 2 u of 0. And the interesting thing connecting this operator bn and the a0 operator is that is the following lemma, that the trace of bn minus v, another potential v1, is bounded above by the trace of a0 minus v, the same powers, which is again bounded by above by the bn minus another modification of the potential, like this. And the modification comes from note that there exist constants C1 and C2 such that the growth of this G0 of t is bounded from above and below by the function 1 plus t to the power d minus 1 with a certain constant. I mean, at the root this goes to c2 and this goes to 1 and this goes to c1. So, and at infinity this function is asymptotically behaving like this. And locally, I mean, C1 and C2 will be something. We don't know what happens locally. And the potentials V are now defined through those two constants. So Vj of t is nothing else than G0 of t, the branching function, divided by Cj, 1 plus t to the power d minus 1 times the potential v. So this is just a constant. So they are more or less the same modulo constant. And this will be the point that calculating the negative eigenvalues of this operator to the power gamma is the same as calculating the negative eigenvalues of this with another potential, but in the end we can modify it so that it works. Alright, so I will talk a little bit about how one can prove the theorem for this operator.
Hmm.
So proposition that the trace of this Bn minus the potential V can be estimated by a constant, and then once again integral from 0 to infinity of the positive part of the potential to the correct power times 1 plus t to the a dt. And here we will use a result from an earlier paper by myself and Rupert Frank. And this says that if one look at the on the half line of the kinetic energy minus the Hardy term, the critical Hardy weight, so we have Dirichlet boundary conditions at zero, and then subtract the potential, then this is less or equal than a constant integral from zero to infinity of the potential to the power gamma plus 1 plus a over 2 of r times r to the a dr. And this holds for a larger or equal than 0 and gamma greater than 0. And if a is between 0 and 1, then gamma is allowed to be larger or equal 1 minus a over 2. All right. So this is not really the operator we have. We don't have the singularity of the Hardy term. And if we only study now the dimension between 1 and 2, this one of the parentheses is negative, so we have the kinetic energy minus something. But if we take this Neumann operator with Neumann boundary condition, originally it is, right, for our operator A0, but with a change of measure also the boundary condition changed. So maybe one should say N is for natural. This is what you get. And but if we make a stronger boundary condition, say, let's say putting Dirichlet boundary condition at zero, then we can estimate then all eigenvalues go up a little bit, but the lowest one is not going up over the second lowest, right? And we can estimate this Hardy term by a more attractive Hardy term like this, and we will have the correct bound. So I will write this down. So now the trace of Bn minus V minus negative part to the power gamma can be estimated by the lowest eigenvalue to the power gamma of this operator, plus the trace of the Dirichlet boundary condition minus V to the negative part to the power gamma. We impose this extra boundary condition to take care of all the every eigenvalue except the lowest one. And this for this trace we can use the previous theorem. But for the lowest eigenvalue we need to estimate only now this eigenvalue with such an integral. And this we managed to do, not all the time. This remain open question. We cannot estimate the lowest eigenvalue at the moment. But in the other cases we can. So we only need to estimate this. And this can be done in a natural way. And once again, due to this Eisenman-Lieb paper, we only need to solve this for the lowest gamma as possible. And if we are in the case where we actually can solve it easily when A was between 0 and D minus 1. I wrote it down before. Then if we are in this case, then we should prove it for all gamma greater or equal than 1 minus A over 2. So we can put gamma equal to this 1 minus A over 2 and try to solve it. And then the exponent here will be 1. So this is what we want. So the number of eigenvalues less than minus tau squared of the operator Bn minus a potential can be estimated as the number of eigenvalues above 1 for the Biermann-Schwinger operator. So the number of eigenvalues above 1 for the square root of V. So we can assume that V is positive. And Bn plus tau squared minus 1, and then square root of V. But this can be estimated by the trace norm. So we get V of R, and then the green function of this problem for those values, of for this value of tau on the diagonal. But if we now let tau move, I mean, we have our operator, and somewhere is our lowest eigenvalue, and then our second lowest, and so on. And if we let minus tau be somewhere here, we will know that we have only one eigenvalue below this, right? And we can move this tau into lambda 1. Okay, so then we will know that we have only one negative eigenvalue, and this can be estimated by this R, and now we have to put square root of lambda 1 here, the R. So this is an estimate for 1, right? And what we want to estimate is the lowest eigenvalue to the power gamma. So we can multiply here by, we can multiply everything with the lowest eigenvalue to the power gamma, which is equal, by the way, 1 minus a over 2, as we said before. We only need to prove it for the lowest exponent. And here we will get 0 infinity and then lambda 1 minus a over 2 v of r, the green function, square root of lambda 1 dr. And now we only put what we want and try to bring out the supremum norm of the rest, and it works after, because the green function one can calculate explicitly. So this is bounded by the supremum norm of lambda 1 to the 1 minus a over 2 green function R on the diagonal with the energy rho lambda 1, and divided by 1 plus R to the a, because this is the weight we want, times the integral from 0 to infinity of the potential times 1 plus r to the a dr. Okay. And then one shows that this is a finite constant, and it is. So in this only works for, this proof only works for dimension between 1 and 2, and when the dimension is 2 and higher, one needs to modify this. But the problem is not maybe when dimension is larger, because we don't have a critical operator in the sense that, well, in dimension 2 we have an operator which immediately gets an eigenvalue, and this is always tough to deal with this. I mean, But for two dimension, it's not a problem because the infimum of all gammas that that this inequality should work for is excluded, right? If the dimension was 2, we could only prove it for gamma strictly larger than 0, and the critical value is excluded. But when d was more than 2, then we have the operator, the Neumann operator, even satisfy a hard inequality, which says, I mean, that no eigenvalue is coming out, and you don't have this critical operator. But when d is between 1 and 2, you get a critical operator, and it is expected that the infimum of all gamma, such that this inequality should hold, should be included. It should work for this gamma. And we can only prove it, as I told you, if this A is between 0 and D minus 1. If it's above, then we can